This is Nurse Gizzer News for the week of February 18th, 2019, and I'm your host, Rebecca Hartman Baker. Today's guest is Taylor Groves. Taylor is an HPC Architecture and Performance Engineer in the Advanced Technologies Group at NERSC. When he's not working at NERSC, you might find him kayak fishing in the bay. Taylor, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Thank you. So today's topic is HPC networks research. So kind of set the scene for me. What's going on?
So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in HPC networks research right now. There's really a convergence between traditional HPC applications and data analytics that we're seeing a big shift in the types of communication patterns and I/O patterns that are going to be running on our system. So, you know, a lot of our work is how do we design and prepare our next system for these new workloads, and you know, how are these workloads going to interact together when they are delivered?
Right. Okay. So, on our machines as they are right now, right, we have like all these different applications running. They have very different communication and I/O patterns. And we kind of record everything that's going on there?
Yeah, so, you know, really we can have hundreds of applications running simultaneously on our systems, and we get terabytes a day of network logs that we can analyze to try to figure out what those applications are doing, how much data they're sending around, and what their communication patterns are. In addition to that, we have other tools like application traces and profiling we can do to get more detailed information about applications we're curious about, and we can do some simulation to see how those workloads run on different network architectures that we don't have today.
Oh, okay. So what are we kind of striving for a network architecture of the future? Like, what's an ideal?
Yeah, so I guess HPC networks are kind of exotic. They're a lot of HPC systems, with some exceptions, are mostly commodity CPUs and memory and things like that. The networks, though, are pretty specialized. So they're InfiniBand or OmniPath, or we have a Cray Aries network. There's other networks like Cray Slingshot that are coming out that are pretty exciting, but these networks have an order of magnitude lower latency than your traditional Ethernet networks. The bandwidth is typically higher, and they're much more complex in their topology, and things like adaptive routing, stuff like that, are some of the features that HPC networks provide. And so really you're looking to keep low latency, have high message rate, and high bandwidth, and you really want to have lower performance variability. And the reason you want lower performance variability, as you scale out an application, particularly a bulk synchronous application on many nodes, as you run into some variation on a node, that tends to propagate outward. And so when you're running on many nodes, you can end up having this amplified effect of the noise. And so we see, you know, for 1,000 runs of some applications, like Lattice QCD, we've seen variation of 3x on our system at the high end. So that's something that we're looking to reduce and figure out why.
Right, okay. Well, I guess that's a little bit like when you're in traffic and one person ahead of you breaks just slightly, then suddenly it's a chain effect and everyone stops.
Yeah, that's a pretty good metaphor.
Yeah. Okay, so some networks sometimes I've noticed have happened where if I'm running a job that's doing naughty things, then it adversely impacts another user, right? It would be nice if we could just have a network where if I'm shooting myself in the foot, I'm the only person who gets hurt.
Yeah, so that's the dream. And current HPC networks are not there. Our next generation system, Perlmutter, has a new network, Slingshot, that has some advanced features with congestion control and traffic classes that will provide better performance isolation than our current network. So that's something really exciting that's coming down the pipeline. That network is also going to be compatible with traditional Ethernet. So your applications that come from big data and analytics and more of the Ethernet enterprise side, they're going to be able to run natively on this network without any sort of issues. So again, it's sort of bringing that convergence of these two spaces and worlds together.
Okay, that's cool. And so those types of data sort of applications have much different types of communication patterns than what we've normally been seeing, is that right?
Yeah, so, you know, the traditional HPC workloads are largely bulk synchronous. They're largely nearest neighbor communication. You know, and the I/O patterns even are you know, built for checkpoint restart. These are, you know, things using distributed data sets, things like Spark, and you're going to have different communication patterns. It's going to look a lot more random or follow a different distribution than our traditional HPC simulations. So figuring out how to build a network that performs well for both of these is a bit of an open problem, but we expect topologies like Dragonfly in this new Slingshot network will perform well for both.
Okay. So in previous NERSC systems, we've had just one type of node. And even to a certain degree in Cori, we do have two different types of nodes, but rarely there's any kind of interaction between the two halves. But in Perlmutter, we're going to have but like one big machine that has different heterogeneous nodes in it. So how is that going to impact the networking?
Yeah, so, you know, different types of nodes will have different workloads running on them and different communication patterns and communication requirements. So that's an interesting problem that we can model and try to determine, you know, how many network cards do you want for, let's say, a GPU node versus a CPU node. What are the bandwidth requirements to get data on and off of those GPUs? You know, and as we move on to more exotic accelerators in the future, that's going to continue to be a trend. Another part of that question is really figuring out how much connectivity you have going between the different types of accelerators and different types of nodes. So I may have a GPU partition on my system and a CPU partition, and do I want the same amount of bandwidth going across GPU to CPU as there is between CPU and CPU? So you have to look at the workloads, look at the intended use of the hardware, and then try to do things like figure out what the message sizes are, how often they're sending data, and design the network from there.
Okay. Well, so speaking of sending data, so GPUs have not really been very good at communication. So is there any progress being made towards that being better?
Yeah, so, you know, there is a lot of effort on trying to sort of take the CPU and remove it from the communication path with GPUs. It's been something that has limited the pervasiveness of GPUs in computation or HPC computation today. Is, you know, you have to have a kernel that can go and do a lot of work on the GPU without having to communicate frequently. So, you know, as things move on, we're looking at how we can set up a communication event on your NIC ahead of time, and then the NIC will be able to pull the data off of the GPU after it receives a trigger. So this will take the CPU out of the critical path there and allow faster communication between GPUs across nodes.
Okay, yeah, that'll be great. All right, Taylor, so switching gears a little bit here, how did you end up being an HPC architecture and performance engineer in the advanced technologies group at NERSC?
So this was, I think, largely by chance. If you look at the trajectory I've taken, so I started CS in undergrad because I liked video games, which is a terrible reason to do it. And I didn't really like it much until I got into the higher level electives like networks, data mining, and digital forensics, things like that. I really like the applications of CS more than the programming exercises themselves. You know, so I finished my degree, and then in 2009 applied for Peace Corps. So I was going to go off and do service, I thought, which sounded like a great adventure, but heard back during senior year that I couldn't go with my wife because we weren't married long enough. And so decided not to do that. And this was around November, with grad school applications around December. So I decided grad school would be a good idea. I looked at sort of jobs, and this was around 2009 again, and jobs weren't looking that interesting. So I'd just taken a road trip through Albuquerque and thought that it looked like a sort of exotic city, low-key and nice, and applied for grad school there and got in and to UNM. And UNM excels sort of at complex systems and HPC, and that's mostly because it's situated between Los Alamos and Sandia National Laboratories, as well as the Santa Fe Institute. So I sort of took advantage of that and, you know, started doing some work with Sandia and really just followed my interest from there, which led me eventually to NERSC.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm glad that your random paths made you land here.
Yeah, it's been fun.
All right, so to finish up, Taylor, three things that you want NERSC users to know.
Okay, so, you know, one of the things we hear a lot about is performance variability, which, understandably frustrating on a system of our size, it's going to be there to some degree no matter what. We do expect that, you know, Perlmutter is going to provide better isolation between users and jobs than Cori does today. So that's really exciting. But there's a couple tips to reduce variability. So if you're using MPI, MPI will naturally sort of decompose your collectives, things like a reduce, into a scalable algorithm underneath. But, you know, if you're doing IO operations, let's say you have a single node even, and you say, well, I have 64 cores, maybe I'll just read 64 files at the same time. You're probably going to be requesting more data than the actual NIC can process. So when you do something like that, you're gonna create some congestion and bottlenecks in the network, and you're actually gonna get worse performance for yourself, but you might be impacting your neighbors as well. So really thinking about how you do these operations and how you scale your algorithms so that you're not creating these bottlenecks will give you better performance, but also help out your neighbors too. So sort of thinking about that would be one of the more useful tips I could give.
Okay, yeah, that's a good tip.
Sadly, you know, if your neighbor's doing this, you're sort of hosed, but...
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Taylor, well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks.